This is Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre. We're once again recording at Nutmeg with our engineer, Frank Verderosa. Our guest this week is Dick Van Dyke.
I'm very impressed.
Ladies and gentlemen, the only true Cape Crusader, Adam West.
Oh, thank you, Gilbert Grape.
Let's welcome one of our favorite actors, Bruce Dern.
Well, thank you, sir. I much appreciate the intro.
One of our favorite filmmakers and raconteurs, Peter Bogdanovich.
Thank you for that lovely introduction, Gottfried. I should do Walter Brennan now, but I don't know if I can. I just ate.
Save it for later in the show, Peter.
Please welcome the multi-talented Michael Nesmith.
What do you think of my cologne? That was good. Huh? That's Boucheron.
Please welcome to the show Jessica Walter, Ron Liebman, our pal Dana Gould, Ira Glass.
Wow. Well, that was quite an introduction. Very happy to be here.
And a man far too famous and successful to be appearing on this podcast, Matthew Broderick.
Thank you. Thank you for that lengthy introduction.
Yeah. Officer Judy himself, Bob Einstein.
What an introduction! I know, that was phenomenal!
Please welcome one of the funniest men in comedy and the recently appointed president of the Tracy Morgan Fan Club. And gentlemen, Weird Al Yankovic.
Please just call me ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, ladies. We have ladies and gentlemen on the show right now. Please welcome our pal, Chevy Chase.
Oh, hi. Yes. Hey, thank you, Gil. You know, I've often thought, what is a podcast? Now I know.
So our new partners at Earwolf asked us to record a special episode this week to give people who may be unfamiliar with what podcasting is or how to download or listen to a podcast a clear example of what our podcast is, an episode that would just sum it up and give them an impression of what our show is. It's just part of an industry-wide podcast awareness initiative for the month of March, which they're calling Tripod, hashtag TRYPOD. So we thought we would gather up some greatest hits, some of our best interviews, and we also get a lot of questions from time to time, and we're going to try to answer some of them. The question that I'm asked the most is, does Gilbert use his actual voice when he records the podcast?
Oh, heavens no. No, I never use my own voice. I was, in my childhood, quite early in my childhood, my parents emphasized reading and education.
Uh-huh.
And I did well, and later I attended Eton University.
Oh, you did?
Yes, quite. And that's where I got both my master's and doctorate degrees. But then one day I found I had a talent to do one voice. Let me see if I can do it very quickly.
So he stayed under the glass coffee table and the hooker squatted on it. And then they were throwing orange wedges at his ass.
I'm sorry, it tickles a bit. And I realized that that was possibly going to be my foray into show business, or like theater, really.
I see. So there was a departure from your actual, the polish of your upbringing.
Oh, yes. Oh, my parents were mortified.
Was it a reach, given that you had, this character was so far removed from who you actually were?
Oh, heavens, yes. I grew up in England, a small town called Kent, and we were very, it's different in Europe, really, I can say it. We were an anti-Semitic family.
Really?
Oh, yes. No, we didn't associate with any Yids. My father actually used to be an informant to the Nazis during World War II. He got a medal.
I didn't realize. Oh, no. Boy, I thought
no,
I knew
oh,
you.
Not at all. Not at all. Yes, I was quite ashamed that later on when I realized that despite what my parents had told me, Jews did not have horns on their heads.
So really, in answer to the question, the people who asked me, does he use his real voice, the whole thing is really a character.
Precisely, Excelsior. And, you know, it really does get tiring going from my regular speaking voice onto.
They were kissing at the airport and he put his finger on his ass.
Which I, of course, never speak that way, and at home I'd catch hell.
Yeah, I was going to say, you seem to have a gift for dialects because it's very convincing.
Thank you. I don't, actually. I usually avoid obscenity personally. I think it's a cheap way to go for laughs, really. I don't work blue.
So, Gil, for the uninitiated, how would you describe our podcast? People who've never heard the show, how would you sum it up?
What the podcast is like both of us, you and I, would get into these conversations.
Yeah.
And we both knew, like, people we should have forgotten years ago.
Yeah, I seem to remember it was phone conversations while you were on the road.
Yeah.
Mostly.
And we would talk, and we'd remember, like, a guy who was an extra in some film no one saw.
Or just character actors that excited us, like Simon Oakland and Bert Mustin.
Yes.
And people like that, just, or Martin Balsam, or people even more obscure than that.
And
John Saxon.
And of course, Skelton Knags.
Skelton Knags, Scatman Crothers, Brock Peters. Just about anybody who came, Jack Elam.
And yes.
We would just sit on the phone for hours and talk about these people and try to top one another.
And then it became one of these things like, let's try to find some of these people who are still around.
That was it.
And you know, when it first started, I think people were looking at it going, oh, you know, it's like it'll be a snarky put down.
Well, people, I don't know why anyone had... Why anyone had any reason to expect that of you. Clearly, they haven't been following your career.
Yes. Yeah. They're just so wrong.
Well, that came out early in the reviews of the show, and people's first reactions was they couldn't believe that you were so reverent, that you were so admiring of these people and such a fan.
Yeah.
And that we weren't there to mock. In fact, if anything, we're mocked by them.
Yes. Because there were people who, in the beginning, we had it really convinced to come on because they thought, oh, it's going to be one of those where they're at the punchline of the joke.
It still happens on occasion, but 170 shows later, less so. Yeah, but it really is. It's also, not only did we want to just pick up the phone and call these people to see if they were around. I remember one of the early conceits of the show was we were actually going to do that. We were actually going to make the call.
Oh, yes.
Like act
yes.
out that we were actually trying to and pretend that the person would just pick up the phone.
I'm very happy that didn't.
Because it would have run out of gas very quickly. But really, it was as simple as that. It was, gee, do you think we could pick up the phone and call these people and see if Ed Asner wants to talk to us or Roger Corman or Dick Van Dyke or will they, you know, Paul Dooley, will they take our calls? Will they sit and talk to us? Will they reminisce about the past? And to our surprise, they were willing to.
And it became one of those things like, I need to have a reason to talk to these people, like Bruce Dern.
Yeah.
And people like that.
Sure.
And it's like, now I felt like, oh, I have a great reason now to call them
right.
and speak to them and ask them these questions.
Because what people don't know about you is that you would carry people's phone numbers around in your wallet for years.
Yes.
And never actually call them. Because you felt you had no legitimate reason to pick up the phone and call them.
That's absolutely true.
Right. And now you do.
I've had a couple of celebrities, like major names.
Oh, sure.
Who have given me their phone numbers. And I had it for years, a bunch of them like that. And I thought, I can't just call them up.
Right. Well, one we can mention, because we talked about it on the show with Kelly, his daughter, was George Carlin.
Yeah.
Yeah,
George Carlin gave me his phone number, and he said, whenever I'm appearing on TV or in a special, he goes, call me. I want to see what's going on in that brain of yours. And it was a great compliment, and I really wanted to talk to George Carlin, but I just couldn't get myself to do it. And another one, Jonathan Winters.
Crazy. That kills me that you didn't call these people.
Yeah. And Norman Fell.
Right.
Fell said, give me a call anytime.
And buddy. Unfortunately, you named three people that were gone by the time that we started the that we started the podcast.
Yes.
But we have, and we never thought when we started, and we talked to Larry Storch and Ken Berry and Adam West, and we were thrilled, but we never thought that it was going to expand to the point that we were going to get Carl Reiner and Dick Van Dyke.
I won't say the first guest we had. But after that one, we sort of went to a pizza place afterwards, and I remember saying to you, well, we tried, we gave it we made an effort, that's it.
But Dara would not take no for an answer.
Yeah, that's the problem with her.
Yes, that's the problem. So really, it is that. It's become a Valentine, but it really was born out of, we'd really love an excuse to talk to these people and tell them how much they meant to us and reminisce and see if they wanted to play our game, see if they wanted to reminisce about the nonsense that we were already reminiscing about and talking about these characters and remembering the minutiae from those episodes. And it, much to our delight, by and large, they do.
And a lot of them do like to know about glass coffee tables and throwing orange wedges at celebrity asses.
Well, that's just essential knowledge.
Yeah.
So for people who want, who are trying to understand what this show is, the essence of what this show is, or what it is we're trying to accomplish, what we did is we picked five clips, five snippets from shows that I guess these clips represent or best represent the variety of things that happen on this show.
And I'm happy to say that it was hard to pick out bits that really stood out because there were so many.
So many. So many. Yeah, we managed to winnow it down to five from about 55. So where do we start? Let's start with this clip. This is this is one of the funniest men in the world, Super Dave Osborne, our friend Bob Einstein, who basically came on the show and ripped us apart.
Oh, yes. It was hysterical.
It was hilarious. And that's what happens with the show. As I said, we're always reverent. Sometimes they're not. And this is a wonderful story about a comic legend that Bob loves to tell, and it's a great one.
I'll give you one more story.
Sure.
We can't leave on that. My first meeting with Red after we agreed to do the show was at his house on Mulholland. And Al and I are talking to him, and we see with the monitor, he's got 700 televisions to see who's coming down. Sloppy White is coming down. Now, outside, Red has five dogs that are half dogs, half human. They're the biggest fucking dogs I've ever seen, and you can't see what kind of a breed they are. Because they're wearing tennis shoes and they're fucking hungry and they're all over the yard. So Red says, Sloppy, how you doing? He said, listen, I'm meeting with Blindstein here. I want you to go down to the pool house. I'll meet you in a minute. He said, what about your dog? He said, how long have I known you? 50 fucking years? My dogs ever touch you? He said, no. He said, well, get the fuck to the pool house. And we watched like on Cinerama Dome. These dogs chase Sloppy White all over the yard into the pool with his clothes on. And all Red said was, God damn, they did go after him. And then we went back to a meeting. And Sloppy's in the pool with his clothes on.
Oh, that's great.
Well, now we're going to destroy whatever entertainment value was in the show by breaking for a commercial.
And now back to the show. So it's so hard to sum up this show in clips. And like you said earlier, we went through so many of them.
Oh, yeah.
Even to get down to five. So here's another one. This is our friend Joe Pantoliano.
Yes. I
think you know where I'm going with this clip.
What do you want to say about something about it?
No, keep going.
Frankie Verderosa, our wonderful, ever-efficient, ever-trusty engineer, knows Joe because Joe comes to Nutmeg and does voiceovers from time to time and said, hey, do you want to do the Gilbert podcast? And he said he would love to. And we got Joe in here, and God, he was great.
Oh, there were so many things. That's what, when they surprise me, I really love it. It's like, and with him, we asked him about playing tough guys, and he said he plays them because it gives him a feeling of power because he was a victim of
bullies. That's right. Yeah. And so Joe doesn't fit the classic profile of a Gilbert Gottfried Amazing Colossal podcast guest in that he's not he's not an older showbiz legend. But he's also got a very long resume. He's been doing this
a long time. Yes.
And he just turned out to be the ideal guest. And here's a reason why. Check this out.
Can you tell that story about this beautiful girl?
The first time I ever brought a girlfriend home. Yeah.
You were very shy among girls.
And also, I thought that women would eventually turn into my mother. I don't want to be under their thumb like my mother's. My mother would just beat the hell out of my father, even my wise guy father. She was the toughest man I ever knew was my mother.
That's a good one.
So I take this girl, Ellen, and she's like a runway model, and she's beautiful, and I want to show off a little bit. And I take it down the Jersey Shore where my Florrie and my mother can, scratch up enough money to rent a bungalow for a week. And it's Sunday afternoon, and we're sitting down, and my mom's at the head of the table and Florrie's at the other head. I'm sitting next to my mother. Ellen's across the way from me next to my mother. My sister is between me and Florrie. And then there's Joe, the insurance man, who was a friend of Florrie's, sitting next to Ellen in between Florrie and Ellen. So my sister has got this glass of iced tea. And in the inside of the glass, there's ridges, and she's kind of mixing the ice inside the glass, and it's hitting the ridges and it's making noise and it's bugging me. And I go, Marianne, do you have to do that? And my sister was like 12 at the time. She goes, Jesus Christ. And she slams the glass. You can't do a fucking thing in this house. So Florrie says, watch your mouth. My mother, steam starts coming out of her ears, and she looks down at him and she goes, she ain't your daughter. Mind your own business. And Florrie picks up a salad bowl and smashes it on the table. And he goes, I put the food on this fucking table. Don't you ever talk to me like that. And my mother goes, oh, big shot. What are you going to do? Shoot me? You're going to shoot me? And I'm like, I get so mad at her. I go, you see, that's why I don't bring anybody into this house, because of your fucking mouth. And my mother turns on me now, and she goes, you little son of a bitch. Who the fuck do you think you're talking to? And my mother grabs her breast. She twists her breast, and she goes, I cursed the milk that fed you. You should have died in my womb. In my womb, you should have died. And Ellen is eating. All she can do is eat. We're screaming and crying and food's flying everywhere, and she's just, her head's down, and she's eating sausage and peppers. And I pack my bag. I'm outside. Joe's saying, go in and tell your mother you're sorry. Fuck you. I didn't, she started it. And Ellen, we're leaving. And Ellen sees the deconstruction of her family. It's the end. And my mother opens up the screen door. She goes, Joey, you want coffee?
That's perfect. So here's another clip that this is a happy surprise, and this is something that happens on the show sometimes, is that we remind the guest of something that they've done that they've forgotten about.
Oh, yes, yes. And at times like that, I don't mind embarrassing a guest.
I remember Leno used to do that. He would pull out an old embarrassing clip from time to time. We do it really more as an homage. I mean, here's an example. This is somebody we all grew up on, the great John Amos, character actor and the star of Good Times. And the interview was winding down, and I had this written on a card, and I said, boy, do we bring this out, or is he going to be embarrassed by this? You don't know how these things are going to go. But to our surprise.
Yeah, he just played right along with it. And he remembered all the words.
Yeah.
And in the words of Florida from Good Times, damn, damn, damn.
You don't disappoint the fans, yeah. Gene. Here's what we're talking about. Take a listen.
I got cut from my last Canadian football team. I needed a job. My daughter was an infant at the time, so I applied for and got a job as a McDonald's franchise trainee. And I'm working at McDonald's during the day, and we weren't doing any business because they were just introducing the chain to all of Canada. So I had like 20 crewmen with nothing to do. So I started getting them songs and dances, rehearsing. Like,
oh, that's right. You wrote song parodies about McDonald's.
And people would come up there and say, what is this place? I'd say, this is McDonald's. We sell hamburgers. You never sell anything. What do you got all these people dancing and singing around?
You say, do I have this right? You took like music from West Side Story?
Right.
And you?
A bun like that could cause a trouble. A bun like that could ruin a double. Stick to your own bun specifications. Yeah, I was damaged goods in those days. Yeah.
and you also, and we have something here that you've also talked about.
This is scary.
What's this? Yes. Frankie, speaking of McDonald's.
Oh, yes.
Grab a bucket and mop. Scrub the bottom and top. There is nothing so clean
as my burger machine.
With a broom and a brush. Clean it up for the rush. Before you open the door, or to shine on the floor. When we finish one dance, start all over again. Tell me, what does it mean?
John is singing.
McDonald's is clean.
You deserve a break today. So.
Fantastic. You still remember it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, here's the killer. I walk into Tom Hanks' dressing room. I go to see him in Broadway. I walk into his dressing room, and he breaks into that song of all the things in the world.
Now, we had Matthew Broderick on the show.
Yes.
And you know, in all fairness, he was doing a play at the time.
It was great. It was generous. He was doing, yeah. He came over here in between performances.
Yeah, he did a matinee, rushed over here to do an interview, and then had a rush back to be on stage for that evening show.
Yeah, generous guy. And how did you repay him?
Well, I personally always fucking hated the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I never got what was supposed to be good about it. And that's the way I started the interview.
You did.
That I fucking hate Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And he handled it pretty deftly.
Yes.
And pretty diplomatically.
I had to be honest.
here's the clip.
I have to preface this interview by saying what everyone has told me not to say.
Uh-oh.
I fucking hated Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Oh, way to welcome the guy.
Who told you not to say that?
I may have said don't lead with it.
Oh, don't lead with it. Warm him up. Yeah. Now, why do you hate it?
Like, we had Peter Bogdanovich on this show.
Yeah.
His mother saw...
Do you like Paper Moon?
We do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His mother had seen Rebel Without a Cause.
Yeah.
And she hated it. And she said that it idolizes, like, you know, just everything young people do is great.
Yeah.
And old people are idiots.
Right. I hate that kind of movie, too. Yeah. I know what she means. Yeah.
Now, what is interesting is you now, mm-hmm. as an adult
yeah.
and a married man with children,
yeah.
What do you think of both the movie and the character
of Ferris Bueller? Well, I, unlike you, like the movie.
Fuck you, I know.
Too. You could say fuck on this show?
Yes, it's the internet.
Blowjob, anything.
Really? Wow.
It's loose.
For the home viewer, I'm blushing.
Yeah, yes, he is. I can attest to it.
I love that movie. I hate young people too. I know what you mean. But I like the, you know, I think John Hughes did a beautiful job. I think it's like a wonderful little lark, and I'm amazed at how it's held up.
What I wasn't expecting with this show is I thought we'd have a few laughs, but I became surprised when people would come in with really touching stories.
Absolutely, like Sonny Fox.
The Sonny Fox stories were amazing.
And also for poignancy, Mad Magazine legend Al Jaffe had a very, very touching story. What can I say? Dominic Chianese picked up a guitar and sang from the heart. And, here, check him out. A different side of the show.
Okay, now this brings me to something that fascinates me. It's like this was as sad and tragic a childhood as you can imagine. And you built a career on comedy and making people laugh.
I have always believed, and I'm firmly convinced of it now, especially after having to talk about my early childhood for the book. I'll mention the name, Al Jaffe's Mad Life.
Yes,
cool. We'll mention it a few times.
And Mary Lou Weissman.
Mary Lou Weissman was the author.
Very well-written book, by the way, engrossing.
Thank you very much. She is a wonderful woman and a wonderful writer. And so what I discovered early on was the first thing that a young child wants to do is become part of the little group of other children that you meet. You want to ingratiate yourself to them somehow so that they accept you and allow you to play ball with them or go fishing with them. And I found that my ability to draw fascinated them. So I started drawing, American cartoon characters, which I used to love on Sundays, bringing up Father with Jiggs and Maggie and Little Orphan Annie and Dick Tracy. And I would draw them from memory the best way I could. And that kind of went over like a lead balloon because these kids were not reading American Sunday funnies. But then I started to do caricature of each one of these kids, and that made them hysterical, laughing because one kid would walk around with his pants practically hanging below his bottom, and I would feature that in the cartoon, and they'd all have big yucks about that. And I found out that, and by the way, these drawings were in the sand. In the street, all the streets were sand. There were no paved roads. And so with a stick, I would draw these things. Later, I did it on paper and showed it to them, and they laughed hysterically. So I found that humor was very important, not only this way to ingratiate yourself in a new tribe, but also as a way for oneself to get your mind off the daily misery that you might be going through.
Yeah.
So I saw in humor a magical device for becoming accepted.
So they decided to move everybody to that camp. There were Russians, there were British, there were French, there were Africans, they had all kinds of compounds. Everybody was going to be moved the next day. Now, We didn't want to be moved for two reasons. One is we were not in very good physical shape by that time. When I was liberated, I'm 6 foot three and a half at that point. I went in weighing 165 pounds. I came out weighing 105 pounds. So we were not in great shape. And also the Allies' planes were shooting up everything that was moving on the roads in Germany. So who knew that they could tell us from the Germans, you know, what would happen? So I guess it came out of Roddy also, but the word came down. The next day, a third of us were to stay in our bunks, in our, you know, the bed things, and say we're too sick to leave. The second third, if they pulled us outside, when they said move, they were to drop into the cold, wet pavement and say they can't move. And if they still moved the last group out, we were to organize in groups of 10, and the first night out, we were to jump the armed guards. Go figure out how that would have worked out. Anyway, the day came, we cast the roles. Everybody knew the part they had to play. And they came in and said, house, you know, let's go. And then these guys would say, no, we can't move. And they sort of, okay, left them alone and got the rest of us out. And then they started, we watched the British move out. We watched the Russians moving out. We were still there. And then they said, okay, start to move. We started to move, and bodies started to drop in a cold, rainy day on the pavement. I started to giggle to myself because I couldn't believe this was actually working. And then the guy, the commandant, came with his gun and shooting in the air and told the Roddy, well, give me 240 guys so I can save face. And Roddy said, the Americans are right over that hill. You shoot anybody here, you do anything, you're going to be a war criminal, and we know who you are. Anyway, they finally took off and left us alone. We went back to our barracks, and we just stayed out of sight because now the defeated German army was coming by, and the defeated army has no discipline. You don't know what they're going to do next. And then about then it was deserted. Then we knew it was really deserted. I climbed up on the roof of our barracks, along with a couple others, and we saw that two rows.
I'm going to cry again when I see that. Two rows of Sherman tanks coming down the hill from Patton's Third Army.
Now, this is a wonderful song. You know, you know who wrote the words to this was Yip Harburg.
Oh, Yip Harburg.
Yeah.
Over the Rainbow.
Over the Rainbow.
Yeah.
Once I built a railroad, I made it run. I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodle dum. Half a million boots went slogging through hell. I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime?
Fantastic. That was a treat.
One of our favorite guests was Tony Orlando.
Yeah, top five for me.
And we found out loads of his father. His father's buried in a Jewish cemetery.
That was fascinating.
Yeah, which I, of course, thought, well, that's the best part of the interview.
Well, I also have to say that we didn't plan this show. We didn't plan long-term what this show was going to be. We didn't have a grand vision for this show. We thought we'll call these people. In the old days, we used to call them on the phone before Frank Verderosa came into our lives.
And we might not use him again after he destroyed three episodes. That we had done. Three great episodes.
Actually, never happened. It wasn't It wasn't Frank. It's just become a runner.
Okay, you can say that as long as we're on the air.
But one of the surprises of the show, something that emerged over time that I never saw coming, was Gilbert singing.
Yeah.
Was Gilbert spontaneously and joyously breaking into song for no apparent reason, whether there was a guest here to join him, whether it was just an old theme song. Out of the blue, Chevy Chase is sitting here, and Gilbert starts singing the theme from Foul Play.
Oh, yeah, ready to take a chance
again.
There
you go. We had Henry Winkler on the line.
I sang the theme to Lords of Flatbush. Yeah. Hey, hey, what do you say? Looks like it's gonna be a very fine day.
That's it. And sometimes, well, those were songs that were at least in context. Sometimes... For no reason, something will emerge like the man who shot Liberty Valance without any prompting. So that's been a very, very pleasant surprise. And again, you never know how the guests are going to react. Are they going to think we're mocking them? Are they going to think that Gilbert's taking the piss out of their song? we're trying to be reverent and we're trying to have fun with it. Here's somebody that really got it.
Oh, Tony Orlando, I wanted to sing Tie a Yellow Ribbon with him, and he was in it 100%.
Hear for yourself.
Are you familiar with Tie a Yellow Ribbon?
I think so.
Okay. Are we ready?
Should I play the music?
You want to sing it with me?
Yes!
Wait a minute.
Okay.
I'll give you the music.
You're really going to sing this with me?
Yes.
He doesn't have
you and I, karaoke time?
Yes.
We're going to do a karaoke with my idol?
Yes.
Why? Let's do it. Come on. You start it. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm coming home.
Wait, start again. Start again. It's the wrong fucking key. He's singing in the key of Z.
He doesn't have a key.
This.
I was going to tell you.
Go ahead. Do it again, Frank.
I'm coming home. I've done
not
my
yet.
Time.
Not yet. Start again.
Rick, you'll put the headphones
please,
on. You got music.
Let's do this right.
Oh, I've got music?
This is our big moment. Wait a minute.
It is.
Let's start. And I'll give you the cue when to start.
Go
like,
ahead.
Like, yeah.
Go. Take your time. Okay, baby. You're coming up any second now. Go for it, Gilbert.
I'm coming home, I've done my time. Now I've got to know what is and isn't mine. If you receive my letter telling you I'd soon be free, then you'll know just what to do.
Hurry!
If you still want me.
Get to it!
If you still want me.
Oh, I'm so impressed.
Tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree.
It's
been three long years. Do you still
let me sing
want
for a minute? If I don't see a ribbon round the old oak tree, I'll stay on the bus. Forget about us. Put the blame on me. Go ahead. If I don't see
a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree.
Why am I sounding like you? Okay, Gilbert, come on.
Bus driver, please look for me. Cause I couldn't bear to see what I might see. I'm really still in prison. And
they tell who's who. A simple yellow ribbon's
what I need to set me free.
I wrote and told her, please.
I wrote and told her, please.
Okay, Gilbert, it's on you now. Chorus, go ahead.
an old oak tree. Tie a ribbon round the 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 old oak tree. Just get on the bus. Forget about us. Put the blame on
I know
me.
Why she married you. She sings like you, too. Your yellow ribbon round
the old oak tree.
A hand for Gilbert.
Yes,
yes sir.
Yes.
This was a first show business.
Oh, oh, that.
Wow.
That's you, Gil. That was Dara singing at the end. That's great.
It's not quite Thelma.
You know,
Joyce.
I haven't had more fun.
Oh.
Thank you for inviting me to this show. I mean, I haven't had this much fun. I don't even know when. Seriously.
we have fun.
Don't you have fun doing
yes.
this radio show?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something, and I mean it. This is the same thing I told Dick Van Dyke.
He sang with
after
Dick Van Dyke.
I sang two duets with him, Put on a Happy Face and Supercalifragilistic.
Oh, that must have been something.
Yes, and I'm telling you the same thing I told Dick Van Dyke. I think I just came.
Boy, it's easy for him, huh? She's jumping up and down. She's literally jumping up and down. Well, I have a new nickname for him, if that's the case. We're calling him Sir Speedy from now on.
But if you really want to get an idea of what this podcast is about, here are some highlights courtesy of Artie Lang, Howie Mandel, Chevy Chase, and Weird Al Yankovic.
I mean, listen, right. He lost to Joel Grey in Cabaret. Could you imagine, like, he was best supporting actor.
Yeah.
The transformation he makes in Godfather 1 is one of the best acting things ever, from that innocent kid to this devil. And he was up for supporting.
Can you imagine? He loses
to Joel Grey.
Can you imagine?
Joel fucking Grey.
And that was the year Brando won and sent Sasheen Littlefeather.
What a great Hollywood move. That's a Tracy Morgan move.
To send the Indian.
Sending Sasheem Littlefeather. I'm sending Can't Talk Right.
I'm sending Hoka Pontus.
I'm sending Jew Lawyer. Hoka Pontus. I'm sending, here's my lawyer, Hoka Pontus. My buddy Alex Baldwin's gonna say, "Well, I can't. I'm too emotionally stressed to tie a tie. I can't tie a tie now. Write a check, bitch." That's all that was. Hoka
Lord.
I gotta smoke the piss pipe.
Let's roll a piss pipe. Let's smoke a piss bong.
Gilbert, you are my absolute favorite comedian. I love you as a person. I've known you for years. But the thing is, and I would say yes to whatever you ever wanted me to do, but I have never been to a more complicated, different broadcast than this. He said, can we come backstage and do it? There is a crew of nine. I'm not sure what anybody's doing. Somebody's just holding an iPhone up, and then we have a photographer for a podcast.
Yeah.
So you can see shots of
audio
podcast.
Only podcast.
Okay. They set up. They were looking for plugs. We didn't have enough pillows for Gilbert to start. Can we start? He goes, I need a pillow. His wife Dara gave him three pillows. We couldn't start. We were about to start. Then his wife said to him, Gilbert, do you have to make a pee-pee? She did. She took you down the hall to pee-pee, which I thought was kind of nice and a little motherly and that. When you finished making a pee-pee, we were about to start, and she actually said to your co-host, Frank, do you have to go to the bathroom? He didn't have to go to the bathroom. And then Frank laid out, Frank has got an array of cards. He's really prepared. I think he's done... He's been on Wikipedia for years.
Weeks of
and wrote you, obviously, a my bio for an intro. And you know how at the end of the day, guys wear pants longer than women wear pants. But sometimes I wear pants for 3 days, and then my wife says, let's throw those in the laundry, and you empty shit out of the pockets. There's little crumpled pieces of paper, and you don't know what those crumpled pieces of paper are. Somebody else, are you with the... Somebody just walked in the room. You're with Frank? Do you have something to do with this podcast? Do you... Who are you?
I have no clue. I just turn up every time I do a podcast.
That's our social media director.
The social media director. Yeah. On time. That's great. So before you do any social media, do you have to pee? And I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for Gilbert's wife. All right.
And Frank and I were discussing how you worked with the Munchkins.
Well, that's where I met my wife. who was shacked up with the Munchkins. All of them. No, it was called Under the Rainbow, and therefore... It was not a good movie, but it required 150 little people, as they like to be called, and insist on. And they are. And we had, I mean, about 100 and something of them, and they were living in a hotel right next to the stage where we shot. The out there, they call them stages. And apparently they were just dead drunk every night, you know, snorting coke and the whole... You know, they don't have long to live. Their livers are getting as big as they are. So, you know, this is the way they are. They were funny. But when I had to be in a whole in this hotel lobby with them, with Eve Arden, which is enough already, you know, they would fart around me. They'd spit. They'd goose me. A lot of them
really?
Goosed me. Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, Jeffy. Yeah. Hey. You know. Yeah. They were just a motley group of people.
There's only one of them still living.
I don't know who
Jerry is. Marin. He's the last surviving.
I don't think he's alive anymore.
Oh, I think he is.
In the original Wizard of Oz, according to legend.
Well, we had a few of the original Munchkins. Yeah.
Yeah. In the original Wizard of Oz, according to Hollywood legend, at least, you could see in the background that one of the Munchkins hung himself in the tree.
That's a lesson.
Yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's a Hollywood myth.
But they...
That's outrageous.
Oh, God.
And they say in one scene, you could see his little body hanging from a noose from the tree.
This isn't right.
See, I was saying, like, look, I'm not fucking Oprah Winfrey.
I heard you were.
Yes. No, I went down on Oprah Winfrey. That's the mistake a lot of people make.
It's an easy mistake to make. But you're saying no actual penetration.
No actual penetration. She one time blew me.
Can we get back on track?
Oprah Winfrey. Oprah Winfrey one time blew me.
Yes.
Yes. While
as legend has it.
Yeah, while Stedman held the cheap movie camera.
You'd think they could afford a better movie camera after all this time.
Oh,
that's what's really offensive to me. She makes all that money. She gives Stedman a cheap movie camera.
Yes.
What are they thinking? What are they doing with all
it's
that money?
Type with the little handle on the box.
The Bell and Howell model.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's disgusting.
And to show it on a projector.
Oh. That's offensive to me.
Yeah, it kills the whole reason for going down on Oprah Winfrey that they couldn't get a good camera. I mean, you don't film Citizen Kane on your little phone.
You don't
you
do
don't
that.
Click the video.
You would not do that. That's not something you would do
normally.
Another thing that's great is that, and we have to mention this, we didn't realize that this show would resonate with so many people.
Yeah, because people were saying, and I thought myself, like, oh, well, you know, it's like this is something we like old Hollywood. No one knows these people. No one cares. But I get these tweets where people say to me, I didn't know who you were talking to.
Yeah, that's gratifying.
And I didn't know the people you were talking about with them, but I looked it up and I loved it.
Well, or that they become a fan of that person. They start renting their movies. They
yes.
start researching them. We thought, you know, yes, we know people, you know, Friars and people in comedy. We knew a couple of hundred people that we thought would be into what we were doing, our core group of weirdos.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, but we really didn't know that there was this gigantic world out there with an appreciation.
And it becomes like, to them, a lot of times, like a fun homework assignment.
Yeah.
To hear a name and look it up and watch their movies.
Yeah. So part of the success of this show and part of the thrill of doing it and what it's become is the fans and the listeners. It's become a community, and that we get to thank these people, thank these stars who were part of our childhood, by introducing them to another generation is really one of the most gratifying parts of it. It's one of the ways we can pay them back.
And I always think of, like, when they used to have shows like Love Boat and Fantasy Island, these stars, former stars who you thought were dead, popped up on those shows. And if you remembered them, you go, oh, wow, they're as good as they ever were.
As good as they ever were. And when they come on this show, like John Biner, when they come on this show, you haven't heard from them in a number of years. Hey, I wonder what he's up to. He comes on the show. He's plug and play. Everything out of his mouth is great. Great timing, great impressions. And you think these guys are, they've still got their fastball. They're still great.
I mean, how alert, well, Dick Van Dyke.
Same thing.
Great.
Yeah.
He was just, I should remember one time we were doing a year-end show and we were talking about the legends in show business that we talked about, and of course we left out Dick Van Dyke.
Yes.
Yeah, which...
How foolish.
Yeah, and I thought, oh, shit. But because he was terrific.
Yeah, and then we got Carl Reiner to come and talk to us. It's so gratifying. I can't believe that it's built to this. From just sitting around your kitchen table making phone calls.
And Carl Reiner sang on the show, and he has a great voice.
Sang an aria to us. So it's there are many pinch me moments on the show every week. Even you, a jaded show business veteran, a cynical bastard like yourself.
A dirty scumbag.
Yeah, is still sitting there pinching himself because he's talking to Carl Reiner.
And
It's a thrill. It's a thrill to see. We never thought it would grow into something this big.
Dick Van Dyke told me I would have made a good buddy on the Dick Van Dyke show that Maury Amsterdam played in. Adam West told me I would have made a great penguin.
See? And you were ready to give up in the pizza store.
Oh, yes.
What have you learned, young Gilbert?
Well, I learned my favorite thing that I learned was when we had Lee Merriweather on.
Uh-huh.
She played Catwoman in the original Batman series.
In the movie.
In the movie,
yeah.
Yes. And she was Catwoman. And I was, you know, going into my usuals. I heard her do like her meow. And I said, ooh, can you do that again? And she said, oh, I'm going to have to spank you. And I thought, if only she knew how many times I've masturbated
that's
to
the
that
real
over
reason
the
you
years.
Do this show.
Yes. That's.
Now the truth comes out.
It's like she must have been like reading my mind all those years.
So it's not about reverence or paying back the stars from your childhood. It's about your sick fantasies.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for listening. We hope you love the show. We intend to keep going as long as the two of us can hold up.
Well, it doesn't have to be the two of us.
That's Scarlett Johansson robots looking better by the day.
Oh,
huh?
Yes.
The man that you heard before doing the nice British voice is actually a celebrity impersonator by the name of Lloyd Floyd, and so is this.
Very special thanks to Lloyd Floyd for being our British voice at the head of the show. You can look him up on imdb.com and see what he's done. That's Lloyd Floyd. You can also look up his podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud.